And he had issues at the office, and some people asked him to give me some papers. He wasn't there in official capacity. It wasn't that I had to sign for it. But when somebody else did try to take the papers, he took them from them and gave them to, you know, pushed them my way.
They see your hands. Okay. So he was subpoenaing you for court.
Well, I didn't find this out until I got to court. He was acting like it wasn't nothing official.
Okay.
But it was Thursday night, September 28th at 5:15. Everything's closed downtown. Okay. So I said, it's 30 pages, a motion asking for a restraining order against me, filed by the FCC. It's alleging that as of September 25th, 26th, and 28th of 2000.
Of September.
Air traffic controllers at the airport here recorded in their logs 10 times that I interfered with their traffic with airplanes.
And tell our listeners how big your transmitters are. How many watts?
We'll put out about 30 watts.
30 watts.
The airport's about 10 miles away.
10 miles away.
Okay. We've been on the airport that day. At that point, we have been on the air 4,247 days. If there was any problems with airplanes, communications, it wouldn't have started 3 days before, you know, 2 days. In fact, three of the complaints, that were a part of the affidavit was actually a part of it after the FCC asked for the restraining order. So they was just adding on. And, you know, it's one of those quintuple moves. This government deems that if you do what they say don't do, you're a criminal. Well, we wear that badge with honor. You know what I'm saying? And what we do is we was doing information. Well, anyhow, they claim that after 4,000 some odd days in the last week, we start interfering with airplanes. This poses a threat to the safety of the airplane passengers, you know. So it required an immediate restraining order to hold, you know. So on Friday, the 29th of September, 2000, there was a hearing going to be held at the Federal District Court. And I was supposed to be there. Well, he never let me know that I was supposed to be there. I said I would go because I wanted to be there anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, but I found out at 5:15 the evening before. So we get down there, and we go through the thing at the door about my tape recorder. They won't let me take it upstairs. I tell them I need a tape recorder because I can't take notes. I'm blind. I don't have no attorney. They said, well, we'll have a transcript, but you'll have to buy it.
No way. Are you kidding me? You'll have to buy it.
Yeah. You know, I told them I got my donkey tied up outside, so let's go upstairs, you know. So the dude takes me upstairs, and I tell him I want to go to suite 312 where the hearing was supposed to be, but he takes me to like a closet basically where nobody has any idea what I'm down there for at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, Springfield's not that busy. After about 10 minutes in this little holding room, me and my wife, then the United States Assistant Attorney Francis Collins shows up and says, "Oh, someone came to the courtroom and said you were looking for us." So I said, "You all were looking for me, okay?" And so I said, "So let's go anyway." You know, so she. Going down the hall, she's trying to be friendly, you know. And I'm like, there's nothing else for us to talk about, you know. So when I get to the courtroom, it's a full-fledged hearing thing. You know, it's everything, you know, you've got a court. I had no idea all this was going on, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So pretty soon the judge runs in. It's a female judge, female prosecutor, black agent for the FCC. You see how they got the table set?
Right.
And so the FCC, the United States Attorney, I'm not even understanding that we were supposed to be in a court. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking it's like a meeting.
This came out of nowhere. And
yeah, they just like bum rush.
Determining your future here.
There you go. You know, free country, right? And so they do the all rise thing, which I don't do, because if we're all equal, I don't have to stand up for her. She didn't stand up when I came in. I'm not standing up for her, you know. And I don't do that for nobody. I don't believe in that. You know, that's not the way we've been raised. And so, anyhow, they go through the court thing, and they run and rambling on about how the immediate danger of the airport has to be considered here, and the court needs to take the safety of these innocent people in the planes, and Mr. Kentucky's political views are...
Oh, they brought up your political views.
Yeah, they said they in fact threaten the safety and well-being of the U.S., United States population, citizens of the United States. That's
that what you say?
Yeah, what I say, what I'm about, what I represent, basically, America couldn't have a worse type criminal in their midst. And when I show you, describe to your listeners how they came at our house, I mean, they probably ain't went after Noriega the way they came to our house. But anyhow, they went through this whole thing like I was public enemy number one, getting ready to, you know, take over the Pentagon or something, you know, with this 25-watt transmitter. And everybody needs to know the transmitter is one sold by a company that's got certified equipment. That it wouldn't put out nothing like that. It's got all kind of harmonic protection devices off in it. There's no way it was in it. And if it was, it did it long before 4,247 nights. And why are those pilots those days on September 25th and 27th and 28th more important than all the other pilots that complained?
Well, what's happening there this weekend in Springfield?
They have the celebration of the death machines. They got their air rendezvous, you know.
The Navy air show?
Of death, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Guns bomb people that don't got slingshots, you know. They want to celebrate that kind of stuff, you know. Springfield is a tourist place, and they rely upon the population being available to satisfy the desires of the tourists.
Right.
And the population, to feel that they have to do that, have to be very ignorant, you know what I'm saying? And you know what one fly can do to a 25-gallon bowl of punch? That's what Human Rights Radio was like, you see?
Okay, so the judge gets the warrant.
The judge issues the order, and everybody leaves, gets up to leave. I get up to leave the courtroom, and the United States Attorney and the FCC agent run over to me. And basically what they were saying, please don't make us show our fangs. And I turned to both of them, and I said, look, I'll be at home, load up your truck with thugs, and come and get the stuff. That's the only way you're going to get it. Okay? So I went home, and I called a few friends and told them what happened. And I went and took me a nap. And I got up, and I went out and sat on the porch. And they wasn't coming fast enough. So about 4 in the afternoon, I started calling them every 15 minutes. And my wife went to the store, and she said there was some fancy cat down there in a very fancy car at the store. And so I knew then that that was the guy that was going to do the scout, you know, for him. And so I got back on the radio, and I said, okay, we made your point, guys, so come on, let's make this move. And so as soon as I said that, I got up, walked toward the kitchen to get me a glass of water. I didn't get to the kitchen before my wife said, here they come. So I turned around, went back, got my tape recorder, and went to the door to greet them.
And you were still live on the air?
Yeah. By then, I stopped so by the mixer, the board, and just left the mics up for the time that I could. And my daughter grabbed the video camera, and I grabbed the tape recorder. And they asked me to come out the house first. And I went out, and they basically let me know outside.
How many cars came up?
We now, as we talked to different people, there had to be at least 10 cars and at least a van around the house. Now, we don't know in terms of support, you know, crews, what they had back up. But from them came 40 to 50 agents.
40 to 50 agents from different departments.
Federal marshals, state police, county police, city police. Anybody had a squirrel rifle that hated a banner and taco could get on a Jeep and ride. They went to the bar and they loaded up. And they came. And they told me on the porch they had this warrant. I said, well, hell, the transmitter's upstairs. Why don't you just go get it, you know? No, we're going to have to, you all are going to have to go in the living room and sit down. So they forced my family, my wife, my daughters. My daughter, 21, with her two babies, one month old and 2 months
old. And how was their treatment of you?
Well, they kept us on. They moved us into the living room, and they set us on the couch until Williford Gray came in and told them to take everything in our house, basically. They took our computer.
They took your computer.
Their printer. They left the mouse and the speakers. They were very cute. They took my stereo speakers. They took my stereo receiver. They took 3 VCRs. They took 4 tape players, 2 cassette, 2 CD players, and 1 CD recorder, 2 mixers, 2 microphones. They cut the cables to our antennas that are on the roof, all the way up to the roof.
And they left the antenna up, huh?
Yeah, but they cut the cables. You know. They trashed our living room, okay? They kicked my tape. They didn't take our tapes or CDs. They kicked them around the room. They kicked the shelf off of one of my stands. They had to kick it off because they had like a dozen nails that I recently put it back together. And you had that word jack boots to kick it off too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was a good feeling, you know, like, yes, you know. For 10 minutes, 5 minutes, first 5 minutes, until the agent came in the front room, the military secured the house, ran around, you know, who's in here? And we try to tell them at the same time, ain't nobody in here but us and myself, my wife, my kids, and my grandkids.
And did they put gunpoint? Put everybody at gunpoint?
For 45 minutes. we sat in the front room for a while, and then they said they got tired of us videotaping them and laughing at them, so they moved us to our bedroom, and they held us in there for another 40 minutes, 35 to 40 minutes. After they wouldn't let us make a phone call. They said if we wanted to call a friend, that was out of the question, but if we wanted to call an attorney, they would call one for us.
Okay.
I guess they see that there's probably the contradiction between an attorney being a friend.
Right.
But anyhow, when they left, after about, they came about 5:15, at 5:57, 5:58, they was, at 6 o'clock, they was pulling off from the front of the house, and we were allowed then to leave our bedroom. And we assessed the situation. They just trashed the living room, the room where the transmitter was in. They basically went there and just did what they felt like,
Now, are you facing any kind of charges or any further court?
They're scheduled for October the 4th to confirm that they were right for what they were doing, you know what I'm saying? To talk about why they wanted such a restraining order, okay? Which I imagine at least they're going to want to do is keep everything they steal. That's just part of the territory, you know. Why take the job if you can't steal, right?
Right.
And so I imagine at least they're going to want to do that. They'll probably give me this note about, you know that unless you people understand what we want you to be thinking, you're going to catch hell again, you know, that kind of lecture. And, you know, like, it's already understood that they deem anything that my people do to restore ourselves from this we call Holocaust that they visited on us for 11 generations is going to be deemed illegal. And those of us who do anything to help our people recover from this Holocaust are going to be deemed criminal. So among us, it's a badge of honor to be called a criminal in this country. So whatever labels, whatever they want to do, that's their business. We say to the people that we've been blessed to learn a lot of communicating skills in the time we've been on the air, and none of that equipment I had the money to buy. And if the Creator allows equipment of that kind to be in my hands again, I'll be right back on the air, and ain't even thinking about it.
How can people help you achieve that goal?
Well, our address is 1113 North 5th Street, Springfield, Illinois, 62702. And, if you got something like, any kind of piece of stereo equipment that might help in the broadcast, send it forward. We'll be glad to use it. We'll put it to good use. We're trench warriors. We fight in the trenches. And all we ask down here is for the equipment to fight this devil, and we're going to whoop him. We're fighting right here in the heartland, where he tells the biggest lie in the world. And, yeah, we enslaved people, but we freed them. And they know that's the biggest lie, because your listeners and everybody out there knows that when they get through, all they got at the end of the day is what a slave had. A place to stay, not the best. Food to eat, not the best. Clothes to wear, not the best. They don't have relationships. They don't have anything that matters. And everybody knows it. And so what we set out to do from the beginning was to make this boy show his fangs. Right here in Springfield, right in Lincoln Town. They proved to everybody that you can speak freely if you think what they want you to think. And you will think what they want you to think, because you will never hear nothing but what they want you to hear.